making noise. He's breathing.
Dramatic body cam video shows clearly the difference the rapid administration of Narcan can make. In this case, two teenage boys are still alive despite overdosing and being found not breathing. The medication, scientifically named naloxone, is a rapid-acting agent to reverse the effects of opioid overdose. While it's hard to know exact figures about lives saved, a large-scale national study showed that opioid deaths dropped by 14% in states after they enacted naloxone access laws. Now, work is being done to get the life-saving medication out into a wider area, with L.A. County now putting Narcan into K-12 schools and county libraries for ready access. Families who have lost children to opioid overdose are perhaps the most sensitive audience to discuss this with. We look into the tragedy of overdoses and the new hope provided by drugs like Narcan. Our Fox 11 News in-depth special, Faces of Fentanyl, starts right now. I'm Hal Eisner. Welcome to this special edition of Fox 11 News in Depth. We're calling it The Faces of Fentanyl because we have the faces of the families with us, of those who have lost their lives, children, brothers. It runs the gamut. You're going to meet a lot of families this half hour, hear their stories, and understand a lot of the turmoil and trauma they've been going through. But I want to start with Sam and Laura Chapman. They've been nice enough to host us at their home here in Los Angeles, and your son's picture is right there. Tell us about Sammy and the situation here.
Sammy was 16. It was February 7th, 2021, and a drug dealer got in touch with him on Snapchat, offered to deliver drugs to the house, which he accepted. He thought he was taking one thing, we don't know what, and it turned out to be counterfeit and pure fentanyl, and he died in his room.
Yeah, Sam, you tell a poignant story about taking lunch.
Right. Well, we found him on the floor after I had delivered him lunch, and we tried to resuscitate him and failed. And that was shocking and stuck with me forever.
And at that point, you became really passionate and an advocate to try to fight this problem by creating or trying to create a new law.
That's right. Sammy's law would require social media platforms that have minors on it to allow for parent monitoring software integration so a parent could be alerted to danger.
How's that going, Laura?
It's going. I mean, right now after the election, we're sort of in a lame duck period, but we do have bipartisan support for it, and I do feel really optimistic that it will get passed because social media will not hold themselves accountable, so we have to do it.
You know, as we look at pictures like this one right here, these are the faces of fentanyl. These are the kids that lost their lives in many cases, in most cases, not even knowing what they were taking. What your name and what were you dealing with?
My name's Julie Shamish, and my son was Tyler Shamish.
This is Tyler.
That's Tyler. Tyler was 19 when he died on October 21st of 2018. So it was kind of before I had really heard of fentanyl. And he had substance abuse disorder, and so he was in treatment when he died. He died in the bathroom of a sober living.
You know, one of the things we don't think about that often happens is the collateral damage. And that's your life, right?
Yeah, I have two other kids, and I had to call my daughter, who was at school at Tulane in New Orleans, and she had to fly home by herself. And knowing that she would have to fly home by herself was the hardest thing.
You said this happened back in 2018. And how has life been in the intervening years?
Well, I've become an advocate also. I got a law passed in California for fentanyl testing, and it's really doing advocacy is the only thing that keeps me sane and gets me out of bed in the morning and give me purpose and to think that my son didn't die in vain.
You know, it's just that difficult of a situation because from what I've done in storytelling and people I've met, like the folks you see here and we'll meet throughout this half hour, these are powerful stories. And unless you're in their shoes, you can't possibly understand it, right, Jaime?
You absolutely cannot understand it. And unfortunately, it takes bereaved families to have to put their grief aside to start advocating for the lives of not only their own children, but for all the children that are out there that do not understand the scope of this crisis. It's a national security crisis. It's a health crisis that is affecting everyday Americans of all economic, socioeconomic status. It doesn't discriminate race, age, or color. It's taking everybody. And, you know, we have to do something about it.
introduce yourself, but also introduce us to your son.
Thank you. My name is Jaime Puerta. I'm the president of VOID, Victims of Illicit Drugs. And this is my son, Daniel, who died on, excuse me one minute.
It's okay.
He died on April the 6th of 2020 due to fentanyl poisoning. I found him practically dead in the safest place in the world, which was his bedroom.
You know, this emotion, it doesn't go away, does it?
It never goes away. It's always there. Every waking moment of the day, every waking hour, it's always present. And all we want to do, and I can tell you, everybody here that you're interviewing today just wants this to stop. We want it to stop, Hal. And the only way we're going to get it to stop is by getting education into our sixth grade, middle schools, and high schools, a specific fentanyl education. That's the only way it's going to stop.
You know, it's one thing to lose a child. It's another thing to lose two of them. Imagine, two of them. But that's what's happened here to the Alon family. And introduce yourself and your boys.
Suzanne Alon, and this is my eldest, Jonathan. He was 23. He died of fentanyl poisoning. And August 28th, 2016, we had no idea what fentanyl even was, nor that he was doing anything, illicit drugs. And then 6 months later, his younger brother, James, who had some issues with drugs, but he had been clean for a long time, but I think that, and he was going to go into program and get some, he was going to get some medication, and he got some Xanax. I guess he couldn't wait. I think with having lost his older brother, and the Xanax was as well laced with fentanyl.
No connection. They didn't get it from the same place.
Not the same place, no.
All right, we have one other person in this group right here who came here from Oklahoma City. And it's your brother that we're looking at in the picture. And introduce yourself to everybody.
I am Shelby Salazar, and this is my brother, Ty Hughes. He was 22. He was not an active drug user. He was about to have his third shoulder surgery, which would have been most likely a shoulder replacement. And we found him in his room, in his bed, with his phone still in his hand.
How old?
He was 22.
He looks like a guy who was full of life.
He was, and him and I, we were extremely close. We talked probably 2 weeks before he passed away, and he said he wanted to be just like me and get married and have some kids and settle down. So his passing was extremely hard for the fact that he had a future that he was working towards.
Isn't that the story with everybody, though? It's the story with everybody that these were young people that had a life, that were having a life, that were going to have a life, who wanted to get married, who wanted to have kids, who wanted to have families. We'll be back with more Faces of Fentanyl after this break. Welcome back to this special edition of Fox 11 News In Depth. It's called The Faces of Fentanyl. And what you're looking at, again, different family members, different children, but people who have lost loved ones because of fentanyl. And why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us about your son.
My son was Elijah Figueroa. He was 20 years old when he passed away from a single counterfeit pill that killed him, made of fentanyl. He was funny. He was my best friend, my only child, and a Christmas baby. I miss him dearly.
When did this happen?
September of 2020.
And so it's been not quite 2 years.
It's a little over two years
now. And so what's that been like in your family?
It's completely torn us apart, but thankfully we have come together and we have a newfound mission, and our mission is to spread awareness in schools and warn as many parents and grandparents about this horrible
epidemic.
So you've
become an activist.
I sure have.
A lot of these families have become activists. And again, your name is?
Perla Mendoza.
And yours?
Sarah Noonan.
And Sarah, tell me about your daughter.
This is my daughter, Sophie Howard. She was 22. She was smart and sassy and the best cook you could ever imagine. She could open the fridge and make anything come to life. And she was really creative.
How did she get, you know, something that had fentanyl?
She bought what she thought was a Percocet. She'd had problems with opioid pills in the past, and she was someone who struggled with anxiety and depression, and pills had been something that had been prescribed to her. And so she thought that this was an actual Percocet, when indeed it was some filler laced with fentanyl.
In some cases, it really is somebody who's, you know, looking for high. And in other cases, it's somebody just looking to go to sleep. just something very innocent, very simple. Your name and what happened to your son?
My name is Deborah Dorian. This is my son, Zachary Lawler. He was 18 years old. He had just enrolled in UC Santa Cruz and was in his freshman year online, and he took something that he thought was something else, and we found him the next morning.
Have you also become an activist to try to deal with this?
You know what? I am more on the other side. I am more, I'm a therapist, so I'm more on the side of like grief and helping parents, and I'm going to go into that side of it. I'm very supportive of the activists, but I want to be there for the grieving moms. There are so many of us. I know what it feels like, and that's the area that I want to go into.
And I hope that the people at home are getting that notion that there are so many of us. That this is something that has ballooned into something so enormous, and it strikes so suddenly, and nobody really expects when something like this happens or why it happened. And in your case, and your name?
My name's Holly Schutze, and this is my son, London Schutze. He was a recovering addict. He went into treatment at 16 and was sober for 6 years. When he turned 22, He was in the car dealership business and needed an escape, and someone tossed him a pill, and he spiraled down and bought a fentanyl and overdosed.
You know, one of the things that we as parents know is that when a child hits 18, they're not a child anymore. And it's very hard to tell them what they should or shouldn't do. How old was your son? What's your name again?
My name's Maureen Weston. This is my son, my only child, Cedric Halloran. And Cedric was 20 last Mother's Day, 2021. And he cooked me a fabulous Mother's Day dinner. And I knew he was anxious about the girlfriend leaving, possibly a breakup, and I knew he was on marijuana or had tried to use marijuana, and I didn't know that he had tried a fentanyl until I found him unresponsive the next day, and I looked at his phone, and I knew exactly that nothing was going on until that Sunday that he got the fake Xanax and died the next day.
You know, we talked about that idea once they turn 18, it's kind of like they're grown-ups, right? Did you have issues with that?
I tried to get him into counseling, but the counselor said, no, he's an adult now. He needs to make his own appointment. And I'm like, if he would make his own appointment, he wouldn't need it. But he actually, a smart kid, had struggled with anxiety. But I think the whole confluence of the pandemic, isolation, homeschooling, and then just this world that we're in of constant social media, you can access anything you want on Snapchat, so it was just one day, one wrong decision, and one fatal outcome.
You know, and you make the point about he should have made his own appointment according to whoever you talk to, because he's an adult.
Right.
The same problem there is that you can't get information about your child because of HIPAA laws and your child being an adult, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's very frustrating because once they turn 18, then the parents don't have any control. I thought I did. I thought I did have access to his phone, and I monitored it, and it was just one day, one pill kill.
And tell me about your son and your name.
Sure. My name is Scott Lehman. This is my son, Noah Lehman. He died when he was 18 from a fentanyl poisoning. Again, one pill. It was April 2020, so right at the beginning of the pandemic. So I think he, like a lot of his peers, were just feeling the weight of the world.
Do you think the pandemic had some impact on all
this? I think he's a casualty of the pandemic, for sure. I mean, he may have been on a path where something could have happened anyway, but when you face isolation from your friends...
You're in that rabbit hole.
You're right in that rabbit hole. And really, it was a quick spiral from March to April 2020, so...
Is there a lesson that you've learned since this happened?
I couldn't start to tell you all the lessons I've learned, but just, understanding that that these terrible things that can happen, hopefully they don't happen to people watching this, but you have to watch out, you have to listen to these things that are going on with fentanyl and realize it can happen to your child. You're not, none of us are really as special as we think we might be.
So look into that camera real quickly and tell the people out there something you think they should know.
Please understand, especially if you're a high school student or a college student, that one pill really can kill you. there's nothing you can do about it. It just stops your heart and your brain, and it really is best to understand the risks involved with fentanyl and the poisoning of the supply of what you might be taking. So,
Fox 11 News In Depth, Faces of Fentanyl, will continue right after this break. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. You know, we hear a lot about this product, Narcan, and you know, in some ways we hear this is something that should be in everybody's bathroom cabinet.
It absolutely should. You just never know. Even if you don't think your child's using, you never know whose life you can save.
But it's not necessarily perfect, is it?
It's not, but it buys you time until the paramedics get
there. If you can administer it fast enough.
It's easy to administer, yes. Of course,
but
if you
have to get within seconds of the...
No, not seconds.
Minutes.
As long as you get to them and they're breathing and they haven't been brain damaged for...
Yeah,
down too long, but you can. It's not like 2 seconds.
There is a time limitation. It's not something that you can just.
It's not going to bring someone back from the dead. No.
Yeah. So, but you had an experience with it.
I did. About a year before Noah died, he overdosed in his bedroom, and we were really concerned. We had Narcan on hand, and it was very easy to use. We called the paramedics, and it revived him. So much so that he didn't want. To work with the paramedics, but he did get saved by Narcan.
Jaime, you're very good with statistics and data, and so can you give us a little nugget here that has to do with Narcan?
Not with Narcan. I'm going to say a little bit something controversial, though. I feel that Narcan may save lives, but mostly what it does, it defers death. Because a lot of these kids have a lot of mental illness going on. You know, if somebody tries fentanyl for the first time, you know, these cartels, they're not trying to kill our children, they're trying to drive the addiction into them. And they're gonna come back for more and more. And that's just the story. So they're gonna come back for more. It's good to have Narcan on hand, most definitely. But you really need to get some help for your kid in therapy.
The idea that the LA County supervisors have asked for this to be in county libraries, the idea that this is gonna end up in elementary schools, well, what's your thought about that?
I think it's a good idea but I think that more so it's more important to have the education in elementary, junior high, and high schools. They need to have specific fentanyl education in the schools, period. Because if not, more children are going to die.
We talk about, you know, the pandemic exacerbating the situation and making people feel deeper into the rabbit hole and feeling like they needed something to help them crawl out of the rabbit hole. We talked a little bit just a few minutes ago about the idea of pill accessibility.
Yes, this generation is the first to grow up with social media, the first to grow up with instant access where you can just order things on Snapchat, online. And in my son's case, you think your kids are safe at home. I found him in his room the day after Mother's Day, and it was too late for Narcan.
And so, you know, Narcan is important to have. We can all agree on that. But it's not, and let me ask you, Sam, it's not necessarily something that you can count on.
That's right. It's something till the paramedics show up. There are cases where you need 2 or 3 doses to actually get the person to the hospital. And like the other parents are saying, there's no substitution for treatment. This is a highly addictive substance. Fentanyl's more addictive than heroin. So once they try it, they're hooked for life.
I have to ask you, because I heard that, you know, fentanyl stays in your body for a certain length of time. And Narcan stays in your body for a certain length of time, but less than the fentanyl. So is it true that you could have a secondary overdose after the Narcan wears off?
That's right. You can almost count on it. See, this was made for regular opioids, not synthetic opioids. And the company that invented it is working on a cure for synthetic opioids.
We only have a few minutes here, but let me go around the horn here and just sort of ask for some final thoughts and something you might like to tell people at home.
You know, my son was aware of fentanyl. My son, I spoke to him all the time. And even with that, it happened to my son. I'm a school psychologist. I talk to children and teenagers all the time, and it happened to me, happened to my family, devastated all of us.
My final thought is that we're not going to stop the fentanyl from coming into this country. There's already enough to kill everyone. Education is our only chance. Parents need to talk to kids. They need to hear from parents like us. They need to hear from teachers, because we all know kids need to hear from multiple sources before they have something sink in.
I think it's amazing to be able to have this many people gathered to talk about this. Your final thought?
My final thought is education is key. I think Narcan can save lives, and if you can get your hands on it, parents, I would recommend that you do. But again, it's not a cure-all, and it may not work for your child, but it is a direction in the right step.
Well, you have an organization. What are you focusing on?
My organization is Project Eli. My whole goal is to spread awareness in high schools and junior highs and educate adults about the dangers of fentanyl.
Education.
Exactly.
Education, education, education.
Yes, this is not a climate to experiment with drugs. Maybe it was in my generation when we were young, but fentanyl on the scene, it's fatal, and we can't control anything that's going on out there. As long as fentanyl's around, there's no safe experimenting with drugs anymore.
And it's not just fentanyl, it's fentanyl-laced things. So things that have a little bit of fentanyl, but just enough to kill.
Yes, fentanyl is the game changer. There's no such thing as recreational drugs, party drugs anymore. You just can't. Anything that's not prescribed. So healthy living, healthy choices if you can.
You also said you heard that a rumor mill, mm-hmm. we have to emphasize rumor mill, but you heard that maybe kids think that having Narcan at a party frees them of worry.
A friend of mine's son, after knowing what happened to my son, said he went to a party and it was a college party, and they just had Narcan on hand. But the pills and the drugs were still around, and people were taking
30
them.
Seconds.
Were it not for fentanyl, all our children would still be alive, period. This is something that is taking everybody it's not discriminating. And Narcan in the schools and in the libraries, that may help, but the only thing really is going to help is education. Specific fentanyl education in the schools is the only way to go about this problem, in my own mind.
I want you to take one last look at the parents, the family members, the pictures of the loved ones who have died. This is problematic. It is, as many here would say, epidemic. And the issue with the parents and the children, it's life-altering, right? It's life-altering, and education, at least to listen to them, education is what could help keep a child like this one, or this one, from going down the wrong path. Fox 11 News in depth, Faces of Fentanyl. We'll continue right after this break. Don't forget our podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you get your podcast. And also, don't forget these faces. Don't forget these young people. Don't forget these faces, these families of those who have been impacted by this drug that just takes one pill to kill. To Sam and Laura Chapman, thank you for letting us be at your home. To all of you, thanks for sharing your stories. And to all of you, thanks for joining us. I'm Hal Eisner. This is The Faces of Fentanyl.